This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known guests about their lives, their careers, and negotiating those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Paley-Phillips, and with me is Whispering Jim Daly.
Hello.
Oh, that's weird. Sorry.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello. That's really weird. That's
you
really
a bit Gollum, didn't you?
That's really set a tone for the pod that I can only apologise for, and I'd like to reel back on as quickly as possible. Hello. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad at all, actually. Not too bad at all. Slightly warmer today, but still cold, still wintry.
Are you dressing more appropriately then?
Yes, I am, yeah. I've actually got the heater on today as well. And I've got, I don't know if you use, oh, God. I've got a little light box. Do you use these?
No.
They're for, like, mood and stuff, apparently. Mm-hmm. But I also figured it'd be quite good for
a heat source.
No, for a ring light sort of thing as well.
Okay.
So that I look good. Although, it's very light today. But it's got my little light box.
So does it generate some heat then?
No.
Oh.
But for listeners, I put it up to my face.
It generates the psychological feeling of light.
Yeah. And making you feel more awake and stuff. But I do have a heater behind me as well. So, yeah, slightly better.
Would you say you're an SAD sufferer?
100%. 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, really struggle with it. It's almost like bang on 1st of September every year. It's mad, really. So, I should have cracked this out much earlier, actually.
Can I make another suggestion?
Yeah.
Vitamin D supplements are very useful in the winter months.
Interesting. I think we do have some, Yeah, I should be taking those.
Yeah.
That's a good shout.
Yeah, daily. You need to take them daily, really. Jim Daly.
Yes, I will definitely get onto that. Thank you. Good advice. Great advice. You know, right at the start of the pod.
Yeah, well, I think it's good to start off with some advice. I mean, obviously, I'm not a trained clinician or pharmacist, but I believe that vitamin D supplements are very useful. In the winter months because of the lack of sunlight and, you know, obviously if you're someone who suffers from seasonal fish
affective
disorder. Yeah.
I think if you're vegetarian like I am, I think iron supplements as well are good because you might not be getting enough.
I mean, you can get like multivitamin type things that have got all these things in.
Yeah, so I've started taking the Wellman stuff. We've talked about this before. Was it Wellman or Wellman?
Wellman, Mr. Wellman.
The ones that have got David Gandy on the front.
Yeah.
AKA Mr. Wellman, basically.
Yeah. He's the Wellman man, is he?
He's the Wellman man, yeah.
Wellman.
He's Mr. Wellman.
Oh, is it Wellman? Is it M-A-N then? It's not Wellmen?
No, Wellman, M-A-N.
Well, okay, Wellman.
Yeah. Anyway, they're good as well. So yeah.
Yes,
but again, like you've just said there, like Giles just said, absolutely, we are not clinicians. So,
well, you can tell by the banter that we're not.
Tell by the banter. Please do consult, you know, an actual doctor or whatever.
And also, but, other supplementary brands are available, not
quite,
just Wellman.
But we can talk from experience, don't we? I think that's fine to talk from experience.
No, I think in the pandemic, Michelle got some vitamin D's. I mean, I've taken multivitamins anyway, but some extra vitamin D ones, because she's a bit of an SAD sufferer as well, and they did help. So I would think that is one to recommend.
Good. Okay, well, do you know what else we can recommend? This week's guest.
Oh, it was so good, wasn't it?
Oh, my word. George Webster is an actor and he's a bloody, bloody good legend. Isn't that absolutely top?
He's a bloody good legend.
That came out of it rugby club, didn't it?
Yeah, he's a bloody legend. You see him flying down the wing. He's a bloody good legend.
He's a bloody good bloke. He is. Aussie there.
Yeah, he can hold his pint as well, you know.
He's a bloody legend. He's a really, really, really top bloke. And he's a legend of Seaford.
He is. I know. Well, fair enough. Obviously, we do lots of prep for these. We both opened Wikipedia before the interview. I'd noticed that he was born locally to me. So I thought, oh, that's good. So often you find some common ground that you can start the interview with. And so I obviously talked to him about that. But then it turned out he is from Seaford. It's obviously, for regular listeners will know, that's where I live and have been living for my entire life. I think also we know lots of the same people as well. So it was something that came up quite a lot on the podcast. So apologies to non-Seaford residents. But if there are any Seaford residents listening, this is a treat.
Yeah, absolutely. Seaford's it comes up a lot on the pod. It's like a real sort of hotbed of creativity and just a wonderful place to live.
Really is.
What's that the tagline? Is that's Hill Valley, isn't it? A wonderful place to live. Is that what the tagline is? Oh, I've got to Google that now.
What, for Back to the Future?
Back to the Future. A great place to live. A nice place to live.
A nice place. Yeah. So, yeah, we're the Hill Valley of the Sussex.
Mate, we should work for the Tourism Board of Seaford, because that's actually... I haven't said that. Hill Valley has a lot of problems in it. But, I mean, aside from that...
Well, ironically, Jim...
We're quite good at marketing. I know.
But, ironically, I did once have an interview for a job at the Seaford Tourist Board. And I didn't get it.
Okay, well, that blows everything out of the
way. That's genuine. I mean that. I'm not just making that up.
Well, that's... What, but you're Mr. Seaford.
Well, apparently not. Apparently that doesn't count, being Mr. Seaford.
Yeah. That is appalling. That is a real shame. A real shame.
Yeah.
Well, their loss.
Exactly.
I mean...
Oh my God. I've never told anyone that before, but anyway, that is now common knowledge. So anyone from Seaford Tourist Board or Seaford Information.
Fuck you.
Tourist Information. Yeah, a big F you to you. But to be fair, I'm now doing the thing that I love doing, so thanks.
Well, which, you know, does come up on the pod, doesn't it?
That this is podcast that would maybe not come about if I'd got the job at the Tourist Information Centre.
Because there's a bit where George talks about, you know, maybe you try something and it isn't what you want, and then you end up doing something that you do want to do. So
exactly.
There's truth in that journey, you know. So I think that's lovely. I do think we should crack on with the episode with George in a bit. Before we do that, we've got, well, I say tweet. It's not tweet. We've got an Instagram review, haven't we?
We've got a couple, and it's on the episode we did with Callie Beaton, the amazing Callie Beaton. And we talked a lot on that podcast about perimenopause. And it's really touched a lot of people, and a lot of people been in touch. I've got one here from Nicola Michelle Pratt. She says, brilliant. Thank you so much. Menopause and the effects of it are debilitating in so many different ways. Thank you for covering it on the podcast, and a big thanks to Callie Beaton for talking about it so openly.
And I've got one here from Liv Hutch 1. Who says, thank you for an amazing podcast. Absolutely in the same position as Callie Beaton. And I've recently left a senior nursing role in the NHS. Perimenopause can be debilitating for some women, especially mental health and cognitive function. On the upside, I'm starting my own business now. Thanks for helping. Well, Liv, all the best of your new business. And thanks for getting in touch. And a big thanks, obviously, to Callie for raising that. Because, you know, as we said on that episode, as two blokes, it's not really something that sort of would come into our sphere as much, which is a shame because it should do. So we were, you know, delighted that she brought it up and we were able to give it some coverage.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a very important subject to talk about. And obviously, if you haven't listened to that episode, do go back and have a listen to Callie's episode. And she obviously talks very openly about it and also the kind of science around it and the kind of thing that's happening in society around perimenopause. More so than the menopause itself, which is talked about quite openly, but a lot of people not talking about or aware of the perimenopause, which is the sort of premenopause stage, and how, as our two listeners have said, how debilitating that can be.
Absolutely. So do check that episode out because it is excellent. Before we crack on, a quick reminder that there is extra content with George this week and all our listeners at our Patreon, patreon.com/blank Podcast, patreon.com/bankpodcast. So do check that out if you want to hear more from George and all our guests every week on Blake. And also, by signing up, it's £4 a month. You also get the pods advert free. You get them 24 hours early than the public people, and you are supporting the show as well, which, you know, we cannot thank you enough for. So if you're enjoying the show, you want to be part of the sort of Blank community and help the show move forward and get all those perks, then patreon.com/blankpodcast.
Yeah.
Right. This week's episode. Let's do it, Charles. What do you reckon?
I think we should. Yeah, I think it would be lovely to do that.
I agree. Here we are. This is the one and only. Absolutely bloody good bloke.
He's a bloody good bloke.
Oh, he's a bloody good guy. It's the one and only George Webster on the Blank Podcast.
George, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thank you for so much for giving us some time today. Now, I live in Seaford. Are you local to me?
Giles, I was local to you.
You were?
I grew up in Seaford and didn't leave it until 2 years ago when I was 28.
I've never left.
Well, so I'm already ahead of you. Yeah. but why would you? It's such an amazing place.
It is. It's a beautiful place to live. And now
so
I've got
you've been
kids,
there your entire more. Life?
I've been there, yeah. So I'm not ashamed to say I'm in my mid-40s. Never had the inclination to leave. So I didn't
it's
know you, because obviously I
place.
Saw that you were born in Brighton. I was born in Brighton as well. But, you know, sometimes people put they're born in Brighton because they don't necessarily want to say I live in Seaford.
Well, Giles, here's a truth bomb for you. As somebody who will understand the area.
Yeah.
I was born in Eastbourne, mate. But that people are constantly like, where's that? So then yeah. You shift it to Brighton. And you know, like whenever you meet anybody, I'm not from Seaford. I'm from a little town outside Brighton called Seaford. And they go, oh, yeah, I've heard of Brighton. You go, yeah, cool. We'll stay there.
Yeah, yeah. It's much easier to reference Brighton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And Eastbourne people just think, oh, that's just like lots of old people. Yeah.
Yeah. Although what a rejuvenation the place has got. Amazing content for your listeners.
I know, I know.
To be honest, mate, Seaford comes up a lot on the podcast.
Does it?
Well, yeah. You know, I love this place. And, you know, I wandered into town this morning, had a coffee. And, you know, I try and get my walk in the mornings and always sort of include the seafront, so it's like
Giles is basically the tourism, the one man tourism board.
I love that. You know what, I'm going to join the board. I'm going to
You're very welcome.
We'll start it together. Although part of it, there's always this thing in Seaford where people are like, don't tell anybody about it. We don't want everyone to come here and flock here.
That's
fair.
Funny enough, my friend owns a coffee shop around the corner from the station, and on Saturdays, there's now, because of the Cookmere Walk and the Seven Sisters, it's loads and loads of people coming in off the train. And like, although he's running a business, you can see he's always a bit pissed off.
That is
bloody customers.
Yeah, if that's not the most like British business sentimentality you've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah. Can't believe
we've
got to serve these people.
I like it busy, but not too busy. Yeah.
How dare they?
Have a day off. No, that's great. Yeah, I love Seaford so much. I really do. It's like my parents are still there. All of my family is still there. I've still got friends there. I'm back there pretty much every week. When I come down, I'm in London right now. And it is. It's an amazing place to grow up and an amazing place to go back to as well. I think everybody does. When you grow up in a place, you don't see it for what it is. You're just in the middle of it and experiencing it. And then when you leave it, you travel around a bit more, you get the perspective, you go, actually, it's actually a brilliant place for the really lovely people. Everyone's just mucking in together. My brother is the chairman of Seaford Town FC.
Oh, okay.
God, that's Tom, cool. Why didn't Tom you mention Webster. That earlier?
I know, right? He's, to be fair to him as well, like, I like giving him stick, but he's done amazing things for the club and the town and... he's really built a little community up there, which has been really, really nice to see and sort of hear about all that stuff from him all the time. I still feel like I've got a toe in Seaford somewhere.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I mean, I often walk through the Crouch Gardens and have a look at what's going on. And yeah, don't get so many games, but I'd like to. I keep saying that I'd like to go to more games though for Seaford because, you know, it's great. Like you say, to support your community, and it's obviously my town that I've been in all my life. And
there's really no excuse. Yeah. I mean, it's awful of you. I mean,
I do feel guilty.
I am obsessed with non-league football. And not to the point where I go to many games like Giles, but I do find like the pyramid and stuff. So I'm now already Googling. They're in Southern Combined Football League. Yeah,
I couldn't tell you what division they're in, to be honest.
That sounds right.
Level 9, I think. Because my local team is Chesham United, and they're, I think, a few divisions above. But I go and watch them sometimes. They were on Twitter two weeks ago, because the day after the Queen's funeral, I think, or the week of, they had an FA Cup game. And the only recording of the national anthem they had was an old one that said, God Save the Queen. So the PA guy sang King over the top of the Queen when it played. And that was during an FA Cup game. And it got it went viral on Twitter. I think they lost the replay. But non-league football is just... Oh my
it's
God,
hilarious.
It is brilliant, yeah.
Yeah,
it is, and it's again for small communities and stuff like that. It's so important, I think, to have that in place for people to sort of gather around, have a meeting point at the weekend or whatever.
Yeah,
he loves it.
Let's go to a Seaford Town game.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's go.
I'll be there. I'll come.
Let's do it. Yeah, we'll be in the David Jordan stand.
That's the one.
Well, fair enough, I saw David Jordan today, so yes, randomly.
This might as well just be a Seaford podcast.
Who's David Jordan?
He's a local estate
Seaford.
Agent, and he sponsors the stand.
Oh my God, I love this so much.
He's big lad. He's big time.
Oh
Seaford.
My God, love it.
He's a United supporter, unfortunately, but there we go. Anyway, let's segue away from Seaford a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Jim, l'apprentissage des langues m'intéresse beaucoup.
Ah, Giles, c'est très bien. Je pense que tu parles le français très, très bien. That was very good. Our French is coming along, isn't it?
I think yours is sounding better than mine, but I'm really enjoying my activities in 50 French coffee breaks.
Me too. We've been sent the books, and we said before, didn't we, life is very busy. Like, it's difficult to find time to do things. But what's great about these is they break it up into really bite-sized little exercises, which actually, it's just the regularity and the shortness of it helps you pick it up a lot quicker.
Yeah, there are loads of exercises in here, little games and activities that you can do to practice your language skills.
Plus some lovely pictures as well of French people.
Yes. For 15 years, Coffee Break Languages has helped make it possible for millions of people to learn a language in a way that fits into their everyday life, whether that's while waiting at the airport, sitting on a train, or on their coffee break.
Yes, indeed. I've been doing it actually while feeding my newborn baby.
Ah.
So, yeah, exactly. His French isn't coming along quite as well, to be honest.
No, but he could be bilingual by the time he's a lot older.
He could be, exactly. Imagine that. That would be great. As we said, it's broken down into really bite-sized chunks. There's 5, 10, 15 minutes varied and lively activities. There's anagrams, there's idiom challenges, recipes and quotations, all sorts of things going on. And it's created for high beginner to intermediate adult and young adult learners. So wherever you are, there's something for you. Designed to keep you motivated while building your skills in key areas. Those key areas include reading comprehension,
writing skills,
grammar confidence,
translation abilities,
vocabulary expansion,
and most importantly, cultural awareness.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or as the French would say, absolument. I'm nailing this. By practicing your new language in a fun and relaxed way in the time that you have, so it's personal to you, then you'll stay on track and achieve your language learning aspirations. I think that's the important thing, Giles, isn't it? Doing it in your own time.
Absolutely.
50 coffee breaks makes that easy. So pick up your preferred brew I just go with the standard tea, to be honest. But you might want something French. Oh, actually, I haven't said that. When I stayed in during the Fringe, my friends in Edinburgh, they have a French brew tea.
Nice.
It was really nice. So pick up your preferred brew and make learning the most pleasant and productive part of your busy day.
Yeah, enjoy your coffee break or tea break, in your case, Jim, accompanied by an expert teacher, and start practicing your language skills in a flexible, fun and relaxed way.
50 Coffee Breaks features 50 varied and lively activities to keep you motivated and build your skills.
Jim, you can make language learning the most pleasant and productive part of your day.
I have, mate. And it's not just French it comes in. There's various languages. They've got French, German, Spanish and Italian. So there you go. Plenty of options.
Ciao, baby.
There you go. You don't even need it.
If you want to get hold of a copy of 50 Coffee Breaks, you can do that by visiting amazon.co.uk/50coffee breaks to learn more about the series and pick up the language that's right for you.
That's absolutely right. 50 Coffee Breaks. Turn your downtime into do time.
So, have you always been into performing and doing acting? Is that something you did from a young age?
No, not really. I started out wanting pretty early on to be a film director. That's where I was wanting to be behind the camera. Started out making short films with my friends. I was like 10 years old. My granddad gives me his camera. And at the weekends, I'm just constantly making things. All in Seaford, down at the Salts and stuff like that. Like, they're pretty much all just me in front of the camera,
yeah,
being James Bond or whatever film I'd seen. I was like, okay, we'll make that in Seaford.
Yeah, David George is your supporting actor.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
he's back bowling it.
Yeah, he's the financier. And it took me quite a long time to realise that I was just making things to... and writing things and always thinking of things just to put myself in them.
Yeah.
But I was incredibly resistant, I think, to even have the words come out of my mouth that I want to be an actor. I don't know why. I just haven't unpacked that yet. And it was even something I struggled with when I first started and I was getting work and I would still sort of like be in taxis and stuff like that. And people say, oh, what do you do? And you just go, oh, I'm an actor. In this kind of like disparaging tongue. I was actually working with a guy called Michael Smiley, who I was in the taxi while I did it once, and then afterwards he was like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Like, just own it. Just say what you're doing and let them judge it if they want to. And I was like, a real big switch on. I was like, yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah. I'm an actor.
I'm an actor, darling.
I'm sorry, darling.
Yeah, that is. I wonder if that's a. I mean, that does come up on the pod quite a lot. I wonder if that's a creative thing, maybe, because we're all like our harshest critics, etc., etc. And yeah, that's a standard thing, I think. And we're always. There's probably elements of comparison with other creatives and stuff. So of course, because I'm a comedian, so I say same sort of thing. I either just say don't say it, or I say I do a bit of comedy or whatever. And then of course you always get the follow up question, which is, well, what have you seen you in? Yeah, well, either tell us a joke, which I always never do, yeah. Or what are you working on? What have you done? What have I seen you in? That kind of thing. And that's horrible, because even if you do have a back catalogue of decent work, you always feel like it's not enough. So you feel like you have to justify
it. Yeah, it's so true. It's so, so true. My stock answer is, do you watch a lot of porn? And
then, yes! Yeah.
And then, he's like, well, you asked. But it's a horrible question, because, like you say, you can be in anything. I tell you what I always get as well, right? Not so much anymore because Game of Thrones is finished. But you'd be telling him about your job and career, like, you know what you need to do? You need to get in Game of Thrones.
He goes,
Oh, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? Let me call my agent and get me in Game of Thrones. Yeah. Like,
that's what I've been missing. I used to get, when I worked at the Mirror, there was a really lovely desk assistant there, and she said, when she found out I was a comedian, she went, what you want to do is... you want to get on that Mot the Week. And I was like, you're right. Hmm. Actually, that's where I've been going wrong.
Yeah.
The thing is, now I've been going like quite a while now, 10 years. And so the other one is like Live at the Apollo. Oh, I'll get on Live at the Apollo. And I'm always like, yeah. One day thinking, well, it'll never happen. But now I know people that started out with me that are on Live at the Apollo. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
they've taken the advice.
It was doable. Jesus Christ.
They've taken the advice. You just...
Unacceptable.
Yeah, it's awful. Awful.
Yeah. Yes, I'm really intrigued by the filmmaking stuff because it's the sort of thing that I'm kind of not making films but writing films, and I've always been into films. So tell me about some of the projects. I know you were sort of saying like James Bond and stuff, but were they kind of action movies? What were you sort of doing?
Yeah, they were primarily action-orientated. I loved action cinema as a kid, like Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee, or the like Hong Kong 80s action films I would consume as much as anything, and then effectively just beat up my friends in front of a camera and film it. I'm still like a huge defender of action cinema. Another thing that I feel like people need to defend, like you say you're a filmmaker and everyone sort of goes, oh, so it's, it must be a film about the shadow self.
Oh, you're an auteur.
Yeah, you're an auteur. Oh, yeah, this, yeah, let's film something where you're running away from your drug addiction. It's like, yeah. I like a balls to the wall action flick and like big cinema and blockbuster stuff. So I was always trying to make that really. With like obviously no budget and we did have one of my friends got a crash mat for some reason but it was like he got it on eBay or something. It's like this massive crash mat, and so we made a film. I'd see if I can find a link to send to you guys. And so we had one film, we were about 13, but we had a crash mat, so we were literally just jumping off things that were too high really with no training.
That was like Jackass.
Yeah, it pretty much was. It was pretty dangerous, but yeah, that was kind of the route that I was going down.
I think I completely agree about the action movie thing. Like I just think I agree they should be defended, and I think there's always a place for them. And I actually think I would probably, because you need to be in a certain mindset to sit down and watch an arty film or a foreign film. Mm. And they have their 100% have their place, like definitely. But like I'm a parent, so like most of the time, if I want to sit down and watch something, I'm just tired. So I'd rather watch an action film, you know, that's easy to follow. Or I mean, we talk about. You won't believe this, but we talk about Hallmark movies quite a lot on this podcast. It comes up a lot. I can't remember how, but every week it will come up. We've already pitched two or three Hallmark
movies. It's mainly Jim, to be fair. It's not mainly
Jim. I love that.
But like, I think there's just I don't know. People's lives are busy. People have got a lot on. And I think actually the escapism of an action movie or a Hallmark movie and the accessibility of it, I think is needed, especially at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like there's always a tier of it. There's a swathes of them that are no good, but if action is handled correctly, you can't help but be invested in it. It's not just a car chase. It's like, no, this has been thought out so methodically that it is a dance, it's a rhythm, it's got timing. And there's obviously with like the John Wick franchise and stuff like that, like suddenly again everyone's like, oh my god, this is what action can be like, and it can be complete escapism, but in an awe fueled sense, not necessarily like heavy CGI and things like that. It can just be as simple as Jackie Chan with an iron doing like a 2-minute sequence fighting someone with an ironing board, and you're like, yeah, that's brilliant, that's so good.
I got one quick question then. Actually, Charles, as I'm thinking, we should ask everybody on this podcast this question. Maybe
what's your favorite action?
You know, we've been looking looking for a hook for the pod, like it's taken us 187
episodes. Yeah, I was going to say 200 episodes in.
Okay. George, you're the first person I'm going to ask this. Okay. I think it might be a recurring question, but we'll see. But it's on the theme of action movies. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
It's a good question, and it is a good hook question, because it's actually something I'm quite passionate about. Because it seemed to become a meme that it was a Christmas movie. And there seems to be this thing where people are like, oh, you know, Die Hard's a Christmas movie. And it's like, okay, guys, let's just calm down a second. It's set at Christmas. There's Christmas music playing.
Yeah.
It plays around Christmas on TV. I would watch it around Christmas.
Yeah.
Is it a Christmas movie? How do you define a Christmas movie? Can you understand that I haven't got an answer here?
Politician's answer.
Yeah. Well, the budget.
I would argue for the reasons you've just said, and the fact that he literally says the line "ho ho ho" during the movie. For me,
true.
Those are enough elements to categorise it as a Christmas movie. So for me, yeah, it's a Christmas movie. And do you know what? That's a hill that I'm willing to die on.
I think so too. I think Christmas movie.
I'm going to stay at the bottom of that hill and look at you guys on the hill and go
teetering over the edge.
I'm glad you've got, like, you haven't fought. I'm just sitting on the fence. I'm like,
enjoy your hill, boys.
Yeah. Yeah. Great Hill, guys.
Well, I guess the same argument could be put forward for, say, Gremlins as well, because that's...
Now, Gremlins is a Christmas movie.
Okay, because it's a gift.
Surely.
I suppose it's a Christmas gift that he gives, isn't it? So, yeah.
But it's like, this is the question, how many elements do you need to, before it gets categorised as a Christmas movie?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll have to draw up a checklist.
Maybe.
Yeah, I bet there is. Someone's done a spreadsheet.
Of course they have.
Oh my god! So another thing on this podcast, George, is that I end up with about 400 tabs open because of things you chatted about, and I'm now going to, for the first time ever, I think Google is Die Hard Christmas movie and see if anyone's done it.
Well, I'm going to go back to the action thing because I totally agree with you. I think it's an unsung kind of genre in a way, and. Now, I don't know if you remember, George, that there were some video shops in Seaford back in the day, and I worked in one of them.
Which one?
The one in Broad Street, Black Cat Video.
Okay.
So that was back in 97, which was a great year for cinema, but the guy that owned it, he loved action movies. There was always, he'd always have loads of copies of the Jean-Claude Van Damme stuff.
Did he think that was a Christmas movie?
So, probably. But that year, Con Air came out, and I think Face Off as well. Two of the greatest action movies of all time, I would argue. And I remember watching those movies and just being totally blown away by them, because not only have you got that escapism, which what you're saying about Jim was that, you know, a pure escapism with action movies.
Yeah.
But they had brilliant actors in them as well.
The whole. I mean, even with those ones specifically, the elevator pitch for those is so good. It's like, yeah, a load of prisoners on a plane and they're going to take it over or whatever. I don't know how you would elevate a pitch Face Off, but the core idea is so good that you can hang all the action off of it, which I think is important. It's simple, it's digestible, audiences get it. You don't need to over explain what's going on to the next scene. It's purely, I mean, you'll probably know this, Joe, like, if you're writing films and stuff like that, it's all about the obstacles, no matter if you're writing the art house film or the action film. It's about how the characters are defeating the obstacles put in front of them. And in an action film, it just so happens to be physical obstacles the whole way. And how interesting can you make those obstacles? And are they going to fail? And are they going to fail again? And there's a whole philosophy behind them that I find so interesting that seems to be, still shunned is probably the wrong word, but at least like, appreciated by a lot of people, but not necessarily thought about necessarily that in depth.
Jim, I didn't mean to interject, but I was also going to say, actually, you know, kudos to the writers of those things, because it's not easy to write action. It really isn't. Like, not that I've written a lot of action, but, you know, it is really hard to write good action sequences.
Yeah, it's hard. It's also hard to read them. Like, when you get a script through, the action sequence is always the hardest one to...
Yeah.
Imagine and to write, because you're trying to get it across in as few words as possible. But if you've got this intricate sequence in your head laid out, it's like, how do you actually get that onto the page? And when you're reading scripts, you're just kind of skimming most of the time to try and find the dialogue. And it's a whole skill set itself.
So is that, because it's really interesting you can talk about this, and I guess like that journey into acting maybe is slightly different to more actors. Maybe I'm wondering if people act first and then direct, or that might be a very naive way of me looking at it. But does that mean that there is more sort of writing and directing in your future, do you think?
I hope so. It's only probably the past 3 years that I've stopped writing and directing films in some capacity. I did a TV pilot a couple of years ago called Star Dogs. It's on YouTube now. It's on Dust on YouTube. And I kind of poured everything I had into that, and it never really took off. It never went anywhere. And I definitely have a kind of, that's what I've got to offer. Like, I've offered everything that I've got as a creative. Like, that's the purest version of something I can create. And if no one's nibbling on that, there's something in my brain going, well, what else have you got? I know it's a nonsense voice, but I'm figuring that out still, I think.
I think that's a very natural voice, and I think that is something that a lot of people probably struggle with. And it's really hard when you're a creative and or freelancer, and sort of your job is your hobby is your job, your love is your job, and it's all fused together. And that is really hard to unpick sometimes. It's like, are you creating for other people, or are you creating for yourself? And like, that is, And that's not me saying like, oh, I've worked it out. I really haven't. Like, it's really, yeah, really tough.
It's a big question.
Yeah. Do you find that balance sort of difficult?
Yeah, definitely. And the more, because I kind of shifted, after that, I shifted into like, I know it will be easier. I'll write a novel. Yeah. Just again, because I can have total control over that. I can control everything within that and I don't need to rely on anything else. And during that process, and which I'm still in, I have noticed that I am writing for me, and a lot of the things that I like follow, I then suddenly go, oh, that's, I'm actually just exploring a part of myself, or like a part of my personality there. Yeah. And then I get to the end of that, I'm like, oh, cool. I don't need to put that out there because I've figured that out. So yeah, it's a tricky balance, but I think they would say like, you want to write the thing that you want to see. So you are writing for you, but in the understanding that there are people out there with similar tastes and similar tastes to you that would watch the thing that you want to put out there. And I think that's probably a good rule to think about, is to just go, make it purely me, and guess what? There's a 10 million versions of me out there that like the same stuff that I like.
Yeah, well, because odds, pure ratio, basic odds, of course there will be. Like, if you like it, of course there will be other people that will. Like, if you like something that no one else out of the 8.8, whatever billion people on the planet like, then you're a fucking unique snowflake.
Yeah.
How have you done that?
You are a snowflake, yeah.
How have you done that?
Completely.
You're the most important person on the planet, probably. And let's face it, guys, I don't want to, you know, burst bubbles. None of us are. So...
Hold on, I'm going to stop you there. Yeah.
Come on.
Well, George has left the meeting.
That's not what my mum says.
Well, funny enough, I saw Jordan Peele talking the other day on a thing, and he said basically like his main tip to new screenwriters and filmmakers is make the film that you want to see, which I think is so true, isn't it? But it's like you say, it's something that we forget because we're often thinking about the end game of it as opposed to the bit in between, which is the actual construction of it. And I'm the same when I write a book or, you know, whatever it is. I'm always thinking about seeing it as the finished article and not actually the best bit, which is creating it.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because again, you have to have a sense of it, but it's like everything in life, right? You have to have the balance of it. If you focus too much on that end thing, you're never even going to get there. But it's also quite valuable to be able to visualize, if you're writing a book or something like that, to see it on the shelf and what does the cover look like, etc. All about balance.
So that's really weird. So I've got your Wikipedia page open, which we do for like most guests and stuff.
I swear
it said when we started the podcast, born in Brighton, but it now says born in Eastbourne. So I don't know if someone's like listening into this call.
What?
Like,
no.
Wait,
I swear
that's
it says
spooky.
Right. Hang on.
Mr. Robot.
I'll tell you what it is. It's on the Google, when on Google Home. On the Google, it says Brighton. Then you go into Wikipedia, it says Eastbourne. Oh, my God. I really freaked out for a second there.
Yeah, that was weird. That's a weird...
Google's listening in on us, like, live update stuff. Oh, my God. This is the future, guys.
Would it put it past them?
No, I wouldn't put it past them. Oh, my God. Sorry. Anyway, sorry, carry on. Actually, would you like a quick little update on Die Hard? Because I've found this guy.
Yes, let's see what's going on.
These tags, sorry. The guy called Stephen Fellows, who looks like he does a lot of... Film data and education. Here we go. And he's done an entire web post with unbelievable amounts of data. StephenFollows.com. Sorry. I'll put it in the show notes. And his conclusion, this is a massive page. There's graphs, there's pie charts. Oh my God. he's really done his homework. His conclusion says, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? The neatest summary I can provide is, it may or may not have been, but it most certainly is now.
How can I make it more vague?
Yeah.
So it wasn't, but it is now.
It is now, but it wasn't. I mean, that is sitting on the fence, isn't it?
Yeah.
And listen, he's effectively, what we were just talking about there of like visualising the end goal. He's made something, that website, he's sat there for hours making that thing going, there's going to be other people out here that want to do this. Turns out, Jim.
Yeah. Finally, he's got a hit. Finally. You're welcome, Stephen.
And he's also simultaneously looking up at Jim and I and down at George at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, that's
halfway up. So did were you into school? Like, was, you know, you said you weren't doing sort of much, you weren't necessarily into doing drama and stuff at earlier on in your life. The direction and stuff was more important. Was there other things you were interested in at a young age, though? Were there other things that you kind of thought other than the filmmaking?
Literally, no. No, I decided really young, or was told really young, yeah, you'd be a good director. I'd be playing with my action figures and people would, I'd set up these elaborate scenes. And people kind of say, you should be that thing. You go, okay. And then, you know, 20 years later, like, you're that thing because I've listened to that advice. I was into martial arts when I was at school. I did kung fu for quite a long time. It was film. It was film for me. And comic books as well, I suppose, and things like that. But it was purely in my own head, creative. Introvert, extrovert kid. My mum always tells me these stories about, like, she'd put on a birthday party for me and I'd be in the corner playing with a toy, but, like, happy as Larry. Like, I'm good, don't worry about me, let kids go play. Mother, don't worry about me. it was pretty one track focus, which I think has been really beneficial to me, because I remember being at school, at least I went to Seaford Head. Did you go to Seaford Head?
Well, I didn't. I went to Lewis Priory.
Oh, he's a smart one.
No, because I came away with one GCSE. I went to Seaford Primary and then...
Okay, good. Yeah, yeah, good, yeah. Colours. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But didn't go to Seaford Head. My boys go to Seaford Head, but yeah, I didn't. It's quite a good school now. Like, because now being a parent, I worry about these things. Like, has it got good Ofsted? it's the sort of thing that you kind of look at. I'm not worried about it, but yeah. So I don't know what it's like when you were there. Lots of transitions.
Yeah, I remember, like, the first year we were there, it went through that transition. It went into, like, special measures. And I remember all the teachers being like, oh, my God, what is going on? And all the kids just kind of like, that's all right, we'll rally. We'll pretend to be... When there's someone in the room, we'll pretend to be good. Don't worry, we've got your back. And there was very much, like, a community vibe. There was a real... community, I suppose. It was it's called a community college. And it felt that way from the teachers down to us. Like, it was a good place to nurture creative talents and stuff like that. Like, nobody put bundles of pressure on me in any different ways. Yeah, I loved it. It was a good school.
I feel like, Giles, we might have to invoice the Town Council of Seaford after this podcast because of the advertising we've done for them.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, we might have to, actually, at some point.
The people of Seaford don't realise how many incredible people have been churned out.
Well, there you go. There you go.
They don't care.
They don't care, though.
They're just wondering, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? That's all they care about.
Yeah, that's all they want. Give us some intel.
Such good content. I'm literally going to ask our guest next week the same question. Even if none of the conversation goes there whatsoever, I just think it needs to be asked. Open with it or close with it. It's interesting you say about you were sort of encouraged to do this kind of stuff and you were told, like, you're good at this, because we had a guest on recently who said the same thing. Like, isn't it amazing, like, when you're a child or a young person and you're validated in some way of one thing, like, the impact that can have and how huge that is from a significant older person, a mentor-y kind of person, whatever. Because if you'd have been told, like, oh, you're amazing at martial arts or anything else, do you think maybe you'd have gone down those routes? Do you think there's something in the kind of the encouragement you had at that time that sort of allowed you to explore?
Yeah, I really do. I think I was a particularly sponge-like child. What an image. I listened to the adults. Like, my grandma and my mum are, like, massive influences on me. And if they said something, I was like, cool, yeah, let's do that. That seems right. One of the things my grandma used to say about, like, growing up, like, don't rush to get older because it's pretty shit up there. Like, stay a child as long as you can. And again, I'm like at 8 years old going, okay, yeah, noted. I'll take that down. Cool.
Let's, my little notebook.
Yep, let's put that. I'm just making myself sound like Stewie Griffin from Family Guy as a child. But yeah, and so I took that on. I absolutely listened to that, and that encouragement, you're right, is so important to just get the nod of approval from your elders, from mentor figures, I think. And like I suppose you've got to be careful in what avenues you place that as an adult onto a child. But yeah, it absolutely informed everything I've done since, I think.
Yeah. There's definitely a responsibility, I think, as an adult, that to I'm a parent now, and like you are, I am constantly careful of what I'm saying to my daughter, and she's only three, but it's still like formative years and stuff. So
yeah,
definitely.
I imagine that's quite stressful for you guys as well, like to kind of know that everything you're saying is impacting this child in some way.
I'm constantly thinking, like,
molding
is this teachable?
Minds.
In molding minds. That sounds like a college in itself, doesn't it? Molding minds, Seaford. I'm constantly, like, thinking, is this a teachable moment? Is this a teachable moment? And I'll try and say something to her, and she'll just like, no, Daddy, and leave. And I think, okay, well, that wasn't a teachable moment. But, you know, but I mean, Giles's boys are a bit older than my daughter, so I guess you've probably, I don't know, dealt with that more?
Yeah, I mean, every day, pretty much. Yeah, and I think it's... One thing me and my wife have always, like, the encouragement thing has always been big on us. I think neither of us were particularly encouraged ourselves. So
right.
I think it's now made us probably, we're probably too encouraging. But I don't think you'd be too encouraging.
No, you
I
can't.
Think, but it's, I think it's important for them to kind of play out their lives in the way they want them to. You know, and if they're into something, whether it's my eldest is massively into video games, so
love it.
That's fine.
Me too.
That's what he, yeah, and that's his thing. That's his thing. Like, you know, there's no more me trying to force him to come and watch football with me or something. You know, that's not his thing. So allow him to have that space and really experiment and learn and go, you know, with that thing that he loves. So yeah, that's always been important to us.
With that, just on the video games thing as well, that. If I could think of the other thing that I was into when I was younger, it was video games. Like, that was my other outlet. And I won't hear a bad word said about them. I think it's an amazing, amazing thing. What games is he playing?
He's got an Xbox and a Switch. And we've still got a 360, which he occasionally plays on, and the PC. So he's like literally got everything.
Wow!
He's ready to go.
Yeah,
good lad.
He loves sandbox games like Minecraft, obviously, and he likes playing Fortnite, as most kids do. But he really loves things like he's really into like Jurassic World. So he's got Jurassic World Evolution. So he likes making the park and stuff.
Amazing!
And he loves those kind of games where he can really kind of. Like say that more creative side of stuff. He's not so much into sort of shoot ups and stuff, but and I agree with you. I think there's a stigma attached to video games still that is really unwarranted. I think for him, it's a way of, you know, because obviously people think of like kids in a dark room in you know, but actually it's his chance to actually hang out with his mates, whether it's online or in together. There's that community, and you know, this huge thing. And obviously the offside as well, you've got like YouTube and stuff, so there's so much content that they're into for via kind of social media, and he learns those stuff. I mean, like Minecraft is like, my littlest has got quite severe dyslexia, so like academia is hard for him, but he can go on Minecraft and he can make like a Viking ship he made the other day, and can feel really good about himself about, you know, through doing that thing. But he can't, you know, he finds reading and writing hard, but he can go and do that. So I think there is something very, I'm very positive about video games and the impact they have on young people. I don't think there's anything bad about them.
Yeah, good. And also the science is done. Do you know what I mean? They've done so many studies now.
Exactly.
And it's like, the science is out. Like, stop arguing the point. It's a net hole. Again, like anything, if you're doing it too much, it's probably going to fall off.
Of course, yeah. Oh, what about you, George? What games were you into, or still?
When I was younger, there was a thing when I on PS2 days. Every movie that came out had a spin-off video game, and they were always trash. But I wouldn't have it because again, I'd be watching the film and be thinking, oh my god, the game for this would be so good, and then I'd get the game, and no matter how bad it was still me. Exploring that world. It was still me as the little character running around and doing the adventures in this different world.
George, I didn't interrupt you. Can I make just a little caveat?
Yes.
GoldenEye is one of the exceptions because that is a fantastic game.
GoldenEye is...
Sorry, I just wanted to put that out there.
It, It is golden standard. It's and they're re-releasing it very soon for Switch.
I know.
So, wow. Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I remember thinking that is a great spin-off.
There are exceptions. There are exceptions. But they don't make them so much anymore, probably because they were all trash. But, yeah, a lot of the stuff I was playing were story-based games, things that were closer to films. Even like the Uncharted series on PlayStation. Remember when the first Uncharted game came out? I was probably 16, I think. I just loved it. I was like, oh my God, this is revolutionary. And then and then you grow up with the franchises as well. The next one comes out and they grow and they expand and you see the storytelling in them just mature because the people that are writing them mature. And The Last of Us, all these sort of things that are just... The Last of Us Part 2... I don't know if you guys have heard of it or played.
No, I haven't seen that.
It is singularly the most powerful story that's ever been told in video games. And through the medium of video games is the only way they could tell this particular story. I won't give too many spoilers away, but effectively, something awful happens and you demonize this character and then... The game kind of forces you to play as that character later on, and you start off going, oh, I don't want to be playing this thing. And then slowly and slowly, this empathy comes out, and this understanding of this character comes out that I'm getting chills just thinking about it. It's mind-blowing how they do a 180 in your brain. By the end of the game, you're like, oh my God, no, I love everyone in this. This can't be happening. And I genuinely think that can only happen in the medium of video games, being able to play as that character, to interact with people as that character, that in films and in TV you can't have that kind of experience. So stuff like that just gets me going still.
Yeah, that's amazing. Absolutely. I've not heard of that, but like, I'm genuinely interested to have a look at that and maybe, like, I say try and play it. It sounds like it would take quite a lot of minutes invested.
There's on YouTube, there's, I think they call them Let's Plays, or people will just play the game and just, you can just watch it like a movie, and I'm sure they've condensed it down. But
that is amazing. And like, you know, for people that, when I grew up, video games were very basic platform and games and stuff like that. The intricacy, you know, of what you've just described.
What was it? What was the Spectrum, was it?
I didn't have a Spectrum, no. I had...
Pong.
It was Atari's, you know, with the...
to program it.
How old do you think I am, Giles?
You're playing Pong, were you?
Pong. Yeah, my computer took up the whole room in my house.
Sorry, man.
Funny you're talking about movies. I remember this is really lame. The Lion King had a platform on Mega Drive, I think. I really liked it. It was really
good.
What
did you have to do in that then? Just go across the desert?
Just like jump along stuff. And like,
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was good.
The colours were great in that.
I remember having good colours.
The colours were nice. Some funny bits.
I remember having RoboCop on the Game Boy, which was... The game was... quite obviously very basics, was on the Game Boy, but the music was amazing because they kind of electrified the music from the film. They kind of made it electronic and stuff.
Version.
Ah, and it was but it was amazing and really haunting. You can find it, I think, on Spotify. I think someone's released it.
I bet someone's done an updated techno remix.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder if like nostalgia plays a part in that as well. Because I'm sure like at the time you have to take in like everything. You know, we've never done a deep dive in video games. It's actually really interesting. But here we go. The sort of cultural influences as well around stuff.
I bought a Switch.
Good man.
Okay, so I can we need to
Zelda basically.
We need to invoice Nintendo at the end of this as well. Because I'm thinking about like. Because the other day, I've got an Xbox One, and you can download retro old games. And I downloaded one of the Sonic games or something. And I was really excited to play it. And I played it. And it was so basic. It wasn't how I remember it. And because there's so many other factors. Like, culturally, it was advanced for video games at the time. Like, you know, there wasn't... the consoles were more basic. Like, I was a child. Like, there's just so many elements that go into it. But I don't know, I'm just thinking about video games. Part of me is thinking, shall I re-download Lion King and see what that's like?
It's never going to hold up.
No.
It's never going to hold
up. What was that on,
The colours just aren't as good.
It's not 4K.
I swear, yeah. Mega Drive. I think Mega Drive is what
okay, I had a Mega Drive.
Yeah. We heard.
Yeah. Mega Drive was a cool console.
That was a big moment for us.
I remember having Altered Beast. And Streets of Rage.
Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
good.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was an ice hockey game, which I think was called NHL.
I remember having that.
And my brother and I used to love playing that, even though we didn't have a clue about the rules. Every time it went icing, we didn't have a clue what icing was. We were like, oh shit, icing. And then you just like press the button. Apparently that was icing. And you could knock people out if you hit the puck hard enough at their heads. And,
yeah, did a little star kind of appear on the, like, you know, like in a kind of Batman way, like a kind of star, like bang, crash.
I wonder if I can download that. But again,
we've just started a new podcast right now. Retro Games Cast.
Oh my god, yeah. Fuck, that's a good idea for a podcast. I can't really remember sort of how we got onto this or what my point was about the nostalgia, but I guess it is nice exploring that, I think. Exploring those moments.
No, I understand what you mean. That some things are better remembered than explored.
Mm,
yeah. And I suppose it's quite a strange psychological trick that your brain plays on you. I remember I had the same thing with Metal Gear, if you've heard of Metal Gear Solid franchise, which are still probably my favourite games. But I remember getting the first one when I was younger and again being like, this is the clearest thing I've ever seen. Oh my God, the detail on this.
The graphics.
On Snake's face, I know. And then, 20 years later, you go to play it again, like, here we go, let's go. And then, literally, he's got, like, 2 pixels for eyes. And, it still holds up as a game, but the memory of it is so much more vivid and clear than the actual experience, which is a strange kind of psychological trick that we play on ourselves.
I went to university. My first year at university was 2003, so the year before 2002, I was, like, visiting unis to, like, see them. And I went to... I want to say Farnham. Was there one in Farnham or somewhere like that? Maybe
there
Farnham.
Is, yeah.
Yeah, Farnham University to do like media studies, whatever.
And they've got a very good animation department. Don't
they?
Don't ask me why I know that, but yeah.
Media. Anyway, I walked into like the like common room and they were like, you know, first or second years like playing FIFA and stuff. I remember looking up at the screen and thinking, oh, there's a game on today. Oh, no, wait, it's like Tuesday, 10 a.m. Oh my God, they're playing a video game. Oh my God, it looks just like a real... I thought it was a real match. It was just like a real match. And looking back, that would have been like FIFA 2002, which I bet now is fucking terrible.
Yeah, you wouldn't get a fucking glimpse of what that is. No. Like, what's this green screen?
Yeah, but at the time, I thought it looked like a real game. And I'd watched football before on TV, lots of it. So that's just... I mean, that's mind-blowing. Yeah.
Did you book yourself... you booked yourself an optician's appointment quite quickly.
Yeah, that's more reflective of you, I think.
Yeah, I was rejected from the university for being a fucking idiot.
So tell us about those first sort of roles that you took, George. And were you doing mainly screen work to start with? Or were you doing theatre as well, or...?
Yeah, I've never done theatre. Again, because I suppose where I grew up, like, we had stuff in Brighton and in Eastbourne and stuff, but I wasn't exposed to a lot of theatre growing up, so it never kind of resonated with me as like, oh, that'd be interesting to do. But for a lot of the contacts that I made from making films as a kid through Brighton and stuff, as I got older and... eventually decided, you know what, I'm going to try acting. I had a kind of like base level of contacts in the Brighton scene, the up-and-coming scene. And so I sent some emails out saying, look, I'm thinking of like maybe doing some acting. If you've got anything coming up, like, let me know. And a good friend of mine, Jamie Patterson, who's like a really prolific director now, he was doing his third feature film for 10 grand or something. And he got me a part in that. And it just kind of steamrolled from there. It was like small part here, little part there. I was literally doing anything I could because I never trained. I never like went to acting school or anything. It was like, right, I'm going to learn on the job. I'm just going to get on all the casting websites. If there's a music video filming in Timbuktu, I'm going. I probably lost money for the first 4 years just by the process of going to places and having to stay in a hotel because they're not paying for it. And built up like a solid body of like work, I suppose, but my trick was I knew how to edit. And at that time, because I was doing filmmaking on the side, my best mate was in a band that were doing really well, so I was following them around doing videos for them. And I was a good editor at the time. I could put a cool little like reel together. Yeah. And that's what I did with all the work that I'd done. I cut together maybe like a minute and a half montage of me in front of the screen, full of things that like I'm barely in, but like I could edit in such a way it was like, this kid's been working for years. Yeah. And it did, it kind of got me into one door to finally get an agent, and then it got passed on to somebody else to get me another agent, and it's just been this kind of slow process and gradually building up from there, the kind of organic in that sense.
Yeah, that's interesting though, because you're like obviously using your skills then to, it's a very proactive way of thinking.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I thought, like ever thought it through. It just so happened to coincide that those two skill sets crossed at that time to work. And it was kind of before many people knew how to edit anything. Do you know what I mean? I was using Final Cut Pro. I'd been to college to do film studies and stuff like that. So I knew how to use the system. And this was before, I don't know, DaVinci Resolve, like an editing software that a lot of people can have for free now.
Yeah.
So I had that edge, and it's like, again, if you can see an edge that you've got, you use it, see what you can do. I'm not sure it would necessarily work now as a ploy, but certainly at that time it helped for sure.
What, because everyone can edit now?
Yeah, I think so. Everyone can edit. Everyone's been making, again, when I was making films, it was like I was the one kid in our town that was the filmmaker in my year. And now I think everybody wants to be, all the kids want to be YouTubers or vloggers and stuff like that. Yeah. So they all have that skill set. It's very, very difficult now to kind of peak above that level and stand out, where my stuff was rudimentary, but I was one of 1,000 people doing it. So it was easier to be seen.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because obviously, yeah, like you say, YouTube's obviously flourished in those years, and TikTok now as well. And yeah, we've all got to be a little bit more savvy with these things. Even Jim. Who's actually doing very well on TikTok, I have to say. So I can't.
Is it Jim, a little TikTok star?
Well, you know, you didn't think I had it in me, did
good
you?
Good man. Yeah, you know.
I didn't
think you did, Jim.
No, I didn't either. No. I mean, it's true, isn't it? I like the idea though of like finding your edge, but I do think a lot of people don't know what their edge is, and I think probably everyone has one. I think everyone's got something, but it's
definitely sometimes
hard to like work out what yours is, and then maybe have the confidence to use it somehow or follow it or something. So it's amazing that you sort of found yours at such a young age. But I there are probably people listening to this thinking, "Fuck! Like, what's my edge? How do I find it?"
Yeah, and that again, that was something that I think I was talking about earlier, and then I got sidetracked by myself that.
Probably me, sorry.
At school, I remember people around me or kids around me being like, when the GCSE options came up and stuff like that, it was like this massive thing for them, because they were like, I don't know what I want to do.
Yeah.
And the teachers and parents are piling this pressure onto these kids about, well, are you going to be a doctor? Are you going to be a lawyer? Are you going to be a vet? What are you going to do? You're like, I'm fucking 30, mate. Give me a fucking minute. And because I knew what I wanted to do, I had no pressure. I was like, well, I know I'll do business studies because I probably have to know how a budget works, and I'll do this thing, and I'll do PE because I like a bit of football. So done. But everyone else feels this immense pressure. And then as they get older, I can see that pressure hasn't alleviated. They're in college and it's the same problem. I don't know what I want to do with my life. I don't know what I want to do with my life. And it's... Even I'm 31 now, some of my friends still don't necessarily know what they want to do, but they found a groove, they found a way to navigate it, and the question of what do I want to do might not necessarily be as important as just like trying shit out and seeing where you go, oh, that's cool, that's interesting, and rather than deciding, you just let it decide for you almost.
Yeah, I think that's really well put, and I think that's so true, and it is true. I mean, I'm 38 and I'm still not so much figuring things out, because you're right, you get in a groove and there are things that I do that sort of work and stuff and whatever, but there's still an element of me that's like, oh, should I concentrate on this, should I concentrate on this? Almost like I've got a sort of bit, almost, this is going to sound really egotistic, I don't mean it to at all, but like almost can do a bit too much and actually would rather focus on one thing.
You're too good, mate. Too good.
I'm just too good, mate. I'm just
too good at too many things.
I'm just too. I always said, like, I used this once in a job application. I said that I was the James Milner of comedy because I'm about 7 out of 10 in everything. And I did not get the job, so I should not have done that.
You didn't? Oh.
No, it was terrible.
Well, yeah, because people think of the personality of James Milner.
This guy's so boring. It's going to be awful.
It's going to be awful to walk around.
I don't know. I just think it's, as you get older, it is a lot harder, I think, to push whatever your niche is or whatever. But I like the idea of, like, maybe just throwing stuff out there, seeing what happens. Like, yeah, you've got more responsibilities, more things to actually sort of, quote unquote, adult with. But that doesn't mean you can't, like, chuck something out there and try.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, again, my mum is a prime example. My mum did a stand-up comedy course when she was, I think it was for her 50th birthday.
Amazing.
Just on a whim.
Amazing.
Just was like, I tell you what, she was running her own business, but and she had to do some talks for like a women's in business event, and she was absolutely shitting it.
Yeah.
And she was like, right, how can I defeat that fear? And her answer was, I'll do the worst possible version of speaking in front of people and try and make them laugh. I was like, Mum, that's nuts, but that's Christmas present coming, so sure. And then she went and did this little week-long course and then did a show at the end of it and smashed it and had an amazing time. And again, at 50 years old, to do that, to go, I'm just going to go out there and just try this new thing. I was like, that is fucking awesome. That's a real, like, something that we should all take, I think. Like, you can try new things at any age. Yeah. Maybe not all things, but someone else can unpack that.
I thought you were going to say, tried it, smashed it, and now she's on a 3-week tour of France or something.
Yeah. She's already on Live with the
Apollo. She's on Live with the Apollo next week. Oh, for fuck's sake!
And Mock the Week.
That's really cool. It's funny to say that I met my wife on a stand-up comedy course, because that's one of the first things that I did I started out with comedy. And yeah, we met on the same 10 years ago on a comedy course as well. So I would recommend them to courses to anyone. Like, as you say, even if it's someone that's just like trying to, improve your public speaking or confidence or whatever, they're really, really worth doing. There was about a dozen people on our course, and it's longer, it's like a 3-month kind of thing. And I think I'm the only one that's still doing stand-up, I think, everyone. But other people were doing it for, same reasons as your mum, like public speaking, or one person in their job wanted to sort of be more confident in front of people. And one guy just been bought it for his birthday by his wife, like wasn't that fast, but had a good time. Like, it was just, my wife as an actor still is, but was trying to like improve on comedy acting stuff, so wanted to use it for that. So, that's a really nice example that there are things out there you can try and do. You might hate it. You might get there and think, oh,
completely.
But like, that's okay to, put yourself out.
You'll probably
get
something out of it, though. Because I think sometimes it's good to do stuff that you don't like, in regards to, like, you can say, oh, okay, I don't want to do that then. I got made redundant after our first child was born. And I was like, I've always been into films. I thought, I'll go and do some work experience at a post-production company or something. And I managed to wangle one at Pinewood Studios. So I went up there for 2 weeks. And the actual work was exciting, but the environment of working in a studio that's like pumping stuff out, and they weren't particularly interesting shows that they were working on. But I remember thinking, like, this is really full on, and like none of the people there had families or anything. They were all kind of single people. And I thought, this isn't for me. And it was a really good learning curve. I enjoyed the work experience, but I thought, actually, that's taught me quite a lot, and I've actually grown from this experience in that's actually now something I don't want to do. And there's
something, put that to bed.
Yeah, exactly. There was an itch there that I wanted to scratch, and so there's something good, I think, about trying stuff out sometimes that don't necessarily go on to do.
Yeah, well, 100%. And that could even be more valuable, isn't it? Because the more things you're trying and not liking, you're narrowing down the focus. Mm. And eventually one day it's like, I hate this the least, so I'll do this. This will be fine.
That's a pretty way to say that. Yeah, I hate this the least. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to use that now.
Yeah.
Tell us about Wedding Season, because I've just finished it. James still
started
watching it. I'm
still working my way through.
Yeah, because we had Omar on a few weeks back. Yeah, it looked like it must have been really fun to make.
Oh man, it was mad. It was one of those ones that when the phone call comes in, it's like, oh yeah, they really want you, they really like you. For you, like, what, really? Disney? Wow.
Yeah.
And it just didn't disappoint from that phone call onwards. It was the actual cast of people that they put, Omar and Gav, the main guy, Rosa, yeah. Callie, all of these amazing people we'd never met before. And immediately, like, it's a cliche, so we feel like we know each other forever, but we literally did. And I went for a drink with them all on Wednesday. We had like a little catch-up drink. And that's quite rare to happen. You become very close with people on a set. And, oh, we'll see you next month. And then it's like, no, it never stays. Yeah. But this does feel like a group of people that will stay together just because the chemistry is so good. It's such an interesting mix of people. And I hope that comes across in the show. But obviously, it's about mainly that core group of friends and Gav unraveling this thing. I just played the posh knobhead in the background. But it's really... I think it feels alive in that sense, that chemistry comes through the screen. It was great.
We loved it. I was about to say you're really good in it, but I didn't want that to come across as you're really good as a posh knobhead. I meant you're really good at it.
Listen, the amount of times where my agents will send me a breakdown for like, he's got cheekbones, but he's an absolute dickhead. He's a scumbag thing. And there you go. And you've thought of me.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, mate, you know the ones I get. My old agent, who is still kind of representing me, even though the agency's closed, put me up. A lot of comedians do it. Like short films and like adverts and such, as funny. The only castings I get or auditions I get are for dad, 35 to 45.
He's tired.
He hasn't shaved. He hates his life. That's all I get.
Yeah, that's not great. It's not great. You have to have a thick skin in this business.
Yeah, you do. You do. There's a lot of self-reflection.
I get one that's like not conventionally handsome, or like you might not think he's good looking at first glance, but he's got something about him. You go, oh, fuck you.
And my wife always gets she's the kooky best friend. She's got crazy hair and she's kooky, but she's really bubbly. And so you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. But to be fair, someone's got to play these roles.
It's actually really important to know your type as well. Yeah. It's like we all want the dream of being able to play any role and have this like varied career, and you can have that eventually if you make it into the big leagues. It's like, right, what do I want to do? But until then, it's like, no, what do people want you to do? And you'd be good, you'd be the best at that.
Yeah.
So posh knobhead, I'm in. Like
he's the go-to guy.
That is the second week in a row where a line has come up that should be the title of the episode. Posh knobhead, I'm in.
That's it.
But unfortunately, we don't do that. We just do names. Second week in a row that's happened, that we should actually do a funny title.
See, you know what?
This is quite a good question to possibly sort of end on, actually. And you've brought it up yourself there. But instead of what do people want you to do, what do you want to do? That's a big. I appreciate that's a big. I've asked you a really opening question there.
Yeah, I should have an answer for it, really. What I want to do is work on really good projects with really good people for as long as I can. I've sort of, as I get older and I'm in the game longer, I am parking the idea. When you first start out, it's like, right, this job's great, yeah, that's fun, but what can it do for my career? Off the back of that, can I get this? Are people going to see it? Is that going to help me build my career? And I think I'm at a stage now where, like, that's kind of parked and you kind of realise that you have no control over that stuff. So, literally, is the script good? Are the people involved good? And are they exciting? Try and get in that thing. So it's about that, about just pursuing that, I suppose. It's just trying to get myself out there and working with really, really good people as much as I can. Because I love it. At this stage, I literally can't do anything else. I have no qualifications or talents in any other area.
You can edit.
So it's like, I can edit. Yeah, it's true. I fucking hate editing, though. That's why I'm going
to You can that's edit and do stop. Martial arts. Come on, mate. You got loads.
Yeah, that's the kung fu. I mean, there's something in that. The kung fu chopper. He'll cut the video and cut your neck. I don't know. Yeah, so, yeah, I do love it. And it's the only thing I can do. It's the only thing I want to do. And I, about like what we were saying earlier about finding your thing, I, whenever I'm doubtful of like, is this, what am I doing? Like, this isn't working, blah, blah, blah. When I get on set and something's cooking and there's like a little magic going, I'm suddenly like the most alive, most alert, most awake version of myself that you just remember that and go, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is what I can do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose just trying to have that feeling as much as I can. Yeah.
That's a good answer, and that's really, really nice. And just like quickly on sort of working with people, because we've quite a lot of performers come on, and a lot of them, almost without asking sometimes, end up talking about the sort of family on set or working with other people and how important that is. And it's interesting you say the same thing. If like, this is a hypothetical, but if like a project came to you and like there was people on it that maybe you knew weren't great, would that stop you working on a project? Would it make you think twice? Like, do you know what? I don't want to spend my, maybe it depends on the project, but like, you know,
Jim Daly's been cast
as Tired Dad number one.
Yeah, Tired Dad number four.
Number four. Can even get a first.
I need to have an R about this one.
Yeah, I suppose.
Tell him not to come up to me.
Yeah, it would depend what the people are bad for. Do you know what I mean? If they're actually bad people, like a fucking Weinstein or something, then good. But if they have a reputation of being a bit difficult and stuff like that, I don't particularly care. I think I quite like awkward and uncomfortable people. I don't mind people being rude to me if I know they're rude. It's like you can just go, oh, yeah, they said that thing. It was awful. It really hurt my feelings, but carry on. And to be honest, like, I've always, again, because I never trained and I never thought about going into the industry, my preconceived judgments were that it was full of divas and you know, people that were horrible and just really egotistical. And I can honestly say I've never worked with anybody that I wouldn't work with again. That I've never worked with anybody that's come across as anything other than super gracious and giving. And I think that's a testament to the, maybe just the British scene itself, or just actors in general seem to be really empathetic people. And everyone's had to work really hard to get there.
Yeah.
And you can only stay there if you're a good person.
Yeah.
Because the industry, especially over here, is so tight-knit. If you're a dickhead, then you're out. So don't be a dickhead.
Wait till next project, mate. I mean, odds are, next project, you're going to work with so many dickheads.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Or I'll be the dickhead. That's the thing, I'm saying that. They're like, yeah, I'm not working with him again.
No, that's really nice. And actually, I found the same thing in the comedy industry. I thought comedy would be full of absolute arseholes. And again, most people are kind of quite gracious and actually like happy they're there and hardworking and normal. Actually, which is quite strange.
It's refreshing to know, isn't it?
I think it's that thing, if you turn up on time and you're just polite to people, then like you say, you'll get offered more work, probably. You know, if you can do the job and you, like I say, turn up on time, you're nice and respectful, then, you know, you're bound to get employed again. And I think, well, I mean, we've talked to lots of actors on the pod, and they've all been very nice. And that's not just because of our warm personalities.
It's all you guys.
Although there is a common theme, Giles, so maybe.
Give myself some credit.
Yeah, exactly.
George, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the pod. We've enjoyed this conversation immensely. Yeah, we've gone to all
really
different,
fun, really
all
fun.
Lots of different places.
It's been great. Yeah, we've been all over the place. I love it.
That's like a scatter shotgun of a podcast. Yeah, like, wow, pick a topic.
Mate, the tabs I've got open right now. Oh my god. No, thank you so much. You've been an absolute dream to talk to, so I really appreciate it. And good luck with everything in the future.
Thank you, boys. We'll have to go and get a beer or something.
Yeah, Seaford Town. Come on.
Seaford Town FC.
George Webster is a bloody good bloke. And he's a bloody good actor. He's a bloody good actor. And he's, yeah, top bloke on the Blank podcast, of course. Really, really enjoyed chatting to him. We could have easily, I mean, we say this most weeks, but could have easily chatted to him for hours more. Very, very easy to be around. Lovely, lovely bloke. Some really nice stuff there about his journey. And I mean, we went off in so many tangents, didn't we?
Oh, we talked about all sorts of stuff, video games and he started out doing directing and making his own little movies, and that's something that he always wanted to do. And then he obviously got into the acting as well because he found himself in front of the camera a lot of the time. And and loved George's sort of go for it attitude, you know, just having a go at stuff and, you know, really sort of embracing the creative process.
Well, I think he's just got quite a sort of infectious positive outlook anyway. Like, I without trying to blow the magic too much, in between recording the episodes and then doing Top and Tails, you and I, because we're two older blokes now, often need to go for a wee, so we have a little wee break. And I find I sort of like leave my cabin, or certainly today, feeling really good, like feeling just almost like skipping down the garden, being like, what a nice hour that was chatting to George. And so I think he's got a very infectious positive outlook. And again, we say it's most sweet, like, we'd love to meet up with our guests after the pod at some point, but it was really, really nice to meet him down at Seaford Town FC for a pint, because it just seems like a lovely guy.
Yeah, it'd be nice to go and see Seaford Town play a game, wouldn't it?
Seaford Town, yeah, I'm well up for that.
Is it really? It's an interesting pitch as well at Seaford Town. So
in what way?
Well, it's slightly slanted.
Oh, okay.
Just like slope.
Oh, really?
On it.
Bit Sunday League then?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I keep saying, don't I? I keep promising to come down to Seaford and I'm never following up on it. So I need to actually follow through. I mean, COVID was a good excuse for a couple of years, but I need to actually follow through on that. Because at the time I did come down and we did our promo photos, it was a really, really nice time.
It's a lovely little place to come and visit.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, I can't believe you got fired by the tourism board. Or didn't get the job, sorry. The promo we've done for Seaford, I just think cannot be underestimated.
No. No, there should be some sort of, some sort of remission or compensation.
Well, we'll work on that. No, there won't be. There won't be. But I'm sure next week we'll talk about Seaford again. Maybe Chesham next week. Maybe I need to stop.
Yeah, we do talk about Chesham and the drivers that deliver stuff.
We do. That's reminding me, I need to text Alex. But anyway, I think we should wrap up this week's.
We really should, episode. Yeah. But what we should say as well is that George is in a brilliant show called Wedding Season. I've finished it. You're still watching it. And we had Omar Baroud on a few weeks back. And it's a really great show. Go and check it out on Disney Plus, Wedding Season. I'm not going to give too much away, Jim, but I think there was a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end. I reckon there might be. We didn't ask this of George, but there could be another season in there.
Well, I'm only a few episodes in, so don't.
Yeah, that's not giving too much away, I don't think. But yeah,
interesting. Good. Well, I look forward to watching that with the episodes I've got remaining. So yeah, check it out. We'll put a link in the description, I think. And do check it out. It's excellent. Really, really good. Right, Charles, have a good week, mate. We're back next week with another guest, as per.
As per, yeah.
Take care of yourself. Have a good week. And crucially, don't get cancelled, mate.
I'll try.
Media Podcast.